I'm Paul Sullivan, your host on the Company of Dads podcast, where we explore the sweet, sublime, strange, and silly aspects of being a lead dad in a world where men often feel they have to hide or at least not talk about their parenting role. I know this from firsthand experience as a lead dad to my three girls, three dogs, three cats, and somewhat remarkably, three fish. I did this all while managing my career and striving to be an above average husband. One thing I know for sure about being a lead dad is it's not a normal role. You're not doing what dads have traditionally done, going to work and leaving the parenting to mom or someone else. Nor are you always welcome into the world where moms are the primary caregivers. But here at the Company of Dads, our goal is to shake all of that off and focus on what really matters: family, friendship, finance, and fun. Today, my guest is Kamau Hai. Kamau is a diversity, equity, and inclusion editor, as well as the education editor at the Baltimore Sun. He's worked for Billboard and written for the Wall Street Journal. Before the Sun, he was the managing editor of the Afro-American newspapers in Baltimore. He and I met back in New York in 2000 when we were both recruited to the Financial Times by Robert Thompson. Back then, we had no kids, no responsibilities beyond work, and at least for me, not a lot of cares. It was a totally different time. Our paths crossed, four or five years ago, maybe more than that, when he and his wife and their daughter were living in suburban New York and our kids were at the same school. Today, he's a lead dad to his high school age daughter, Lily, and his wife, Susan, a cardiologist who works in the insurance industry. Kamau, welcome to the Company of Dads podcast.
Thanks for having me, Paul. It's great to be here. I've been thinking a lot about this whole lead dad thing, and the one memory that led me down this path to when you said, like, hey, let's talk about being lead dads, is I was once sitting in the pickup line to pick up my daughter at pre-K, and I was talking to another dad. And he was essentially embarrassed to be there picking up his child because in his mind, he should be at work being, you know, the financial provider. And I was just like, I don't want to be with you, people like you at all. I want to be with people who are present and enjoy spending this valuable time with their children.
Yeah. But I have to ask you, you bring up the car line. I mean, you're a longtime journalist as I was. I mean, what's more stressful? A newspaper deadline or getting to pick up on time for your daughter?
Well, as someone who was late more often than I would like to admit, I'm going to say newspaper deadline. And the reason I was often late to pick up was because of newspaper deadlines.
Yeah. But now she's a teenager. She's 14. So she's just used to, you know, rolls her eyes. Dad's always late. It's going to be okay.
Yes. Well, I have to say the other thing is that the pandemic and sort of working from home has taught me that I do not miss being late to pick up my child. Occasionally I'm late because sometimes life happens, but on a general basis, I am there on time and it makes life much easier.
Yeah. Now, you and I have known each other 20 plus years. Mm-hmm. You and Susan, your wife Susan, you met in the 10th grade.
Yes.
And God, what a saint she is, huh? All these years. Yeah.
I know. I mean, I look back on myself in 10th grade and go like, why would you marry me? Who's that goofball? He'll never amount to anything. But no, we met in high school, broke up for college, like many couples do, and then sort of got back together later in life. And then we lived in New York together and, you know, we're still together. We're coming up on 19 years in September.
That's fantastic. And now that you have a daughter who will go into 10th grade next year, you can have this, like, is she going to meet like the guy she one day marries? And like, you know, because high school boys are, they're a geeky, nerdy group. And high school,
yes,
as a father of three daughters, like the daughters are always, the girls are always more poised and the boys have no idea what's going on.
Yeah. For years, I wanted to get her a shirt that said, boys are dirty, throw rocks at them. But
we'll sell that on the Company of Dads shop. We'll definitely sell that shirt.
Yeah. My wife convinced me that was not perhaps the best idea. And I went, all right, I guess so. But are you sure? But no, I mean, if she meets someone, we will be happy for her. If she doesn't meet someone, we'll also be happy for her. I feel like, you know, you meet the friends and, you know, you sort of see what they do and you go like, but I know what it was like in high school. Like there's the sort of what you present to your parents. And then there's real life of like, what's really going on. And sort of like that tension between like how much you know and how much you don't know is ever present.
Yeah. Now, you and I know deadlines, you know, and that's the life of a journalist. It focuses the mind, but it also robs you of some control over your time. You know, your wife is a cardiologist, you know, boy, heart stopping work. Couldn't let that go. How did you decide? I mean, you've known each other for so long. How did you decide when Lily was born, which one of you would kind of step up and take that primary parent role, that, that you would become the lead dad?
Well, you know, it's interesting. We started off with, we started off sort of thinking we would be equals. And we started off with help because we were thankfully privileged to be in that position. And then the Great Recession hit and I was laid off from my job. And we sort of had a real and honest conversation and said, you know what, maybe I will take this time to sort of focus on raising our child and we will sort of go from there. And then, you know, a couple of years later, I got a full-time job, but sort of I enjoyed being the lead parent. And frankly, I still had more bandwidth to do it. So it just sort of kept going, even when I went back to full-time employment.
The bandwidth is a great comment. It's one thing that I think a lot about. It's not that, you know, being the lead dad, you can work full-time, part-time, or, you know, for a period of time, whatever, devote yourself fully to your child, but it's having that, you know, flexibility. It's having that ability to own your own time. When you think about it, and you talked to the story at the top of the pickup line and the dad is a little embarrassed to be there, you know, we see this all the time. What are some of the challenges of being a lead dad in a world where it's still not, you know, totally normal, or it causes, you know, certain men to sort of backpedal and over-explain as to why they're there?
Yes. I mean, there's definitely, you know, when you meet some men, there's an element of shame. For me, it was always like, listen, I'm here. I love the kid. Well, let's see what happens. I will always remember going to essentially like a mommy and me class when our daughter was, we'll say maybe two. And, you know, it's me and suburban moms. And we're all sort of sitting around the circle. And, you know, I'm enthusiastic. I'm there. I'm present. And, you know, you can just sort of, you can feel the tension in the room as the women are like, who is this guy? Like, I thought this was like, who let him in? And it was just sort of like, listen, I'm here. I'm the one putting together the birthday parties. I'm the one buying the gifts for the birthday parties. Like, you will see me at play dates. You know, I'm the one who had to say like, hey, Sally, let's have a play date. And at first it was awkward because there's always this strange tension because as a man calling a woman to sort of arrange a play date, there was always an element of weirdness. But eventually sort of people realized that, you know, I wasn't looking for them. I was looking for their kid. They were almost irrelevant to me. And, you know, I realized the other thing that sort of really helped is at the school that our daughter was at, there were a lot of ex-New York moms there. And ex-New York moms love nothing more than talking about living in New York and how they are not suburban moms. They are ex-New Yorkers. So it was like, hey, let, you know, you want to have a glass of wine at 10 o'clock in the morning? I'm not going to stop you. Yes, we're all ex-New Yorkers here. Let's live it up.
Exactly. There's no shame. There's no shame. Yeah, in wine, I'm not judging you. No judging here.
Exactly. And so that helped tremendously.
Yeah, it's getting past that barrier that I think a lot of dads find difficult. I mean, the running joke is there's no man more lonelier than the dad with his kid at the playground. Because there you are, you're all parents, you're all there for the same reason. Nobody shows up at a playground just to hang out and drink, have a glass of wine at 10 a.m. You're there because your child wants to run around and it's a nice day and you got to get the kid
You got to get out of the house. You got to get out of the house. You're driving me crazy.
What do you think of like some tips, you know, you've been at this lead dadding a couple of years longer than me, but you know, how'd you break the ice? How'd you get those moms to say, okay, he's an okay guy. I guess my kids can have a play date with him. How did you do that?
You know, I feel like it was a lot like I relied a lot on my journalism skills. You know, you and I spend our days talking to strangers and essentially getting people to open up very quickly, often about sensitive and uncomfortable topics.
Yeah.
So I always treated sort of playground time as these are not moms, quote unquote. These are people with interesting lives. They just happen to be at a playground and happen to have a child. So it would just be as simple as going like, you know, so just sort of saying, you know, sort of like meeting women in a bar when you're over the age of 30, you know, you just say hello. you know, my name is, what's your name?
You didn't have a playground line to like get the play date, you know, secured?
No, actually, I mean,
I've got a trampoline in my backyard. If you want to come over with your kids,
I've got a jug of frosé. You want some? No, actually, the way I would do it is I would see which children my child was playing with, and then sort of figure out who the mom was and go like, hi, I'm Kamau. That's my daughter, Lily. Would you like to have a play date? And 9 times out of 10, they would say yes. There was always the occasional person who sort of like, you know, clutched their purse or
what would they say? Maybe, what would they say? Like,
yeah, well, you know, you also have to throw the element of race into it. So as a person of color, in a primarily white world, you know, sometimes people were uncomfortable. And those are their problems to deal with, not mine. I would just go like, listen, you're missing out. I'm way fun. So your loss.
I've got the frosé and the trampoline. I don't know.
Exactly. You know, you can go hang out with those other losers, but we're going to go have a good time.
Oh, man. You know, one of the things, you know, you and I are sort of outgoing, so it's a different set of... When you talk to other dads in this role, I think there's a lot of loneliness. You know, you're like not kind of understood. Now, you don't want to be, you know, crying as like, God, I'm misunderstood. But there is sort of this reality, you know, the moms don't always accept you. And the dads who are the go-to-work dads, you know, you may not want to be friends with them, but they don't always understand why you're doing this or how this has come about. What are some of those times when you've been in that position and how have you kind of, you know, navigated around it?
You know, when Lily was younger, I found another lead dad, and essentially we became thick as thieves. Mm-hmm. Because it was essentially the two of us. There were a couple of other dads, but they were primarily the ashamed, resentful ones, the ones who were like, I'm too good to be picking up my child. I shouldn't be here. I should be on Wall Street, like, you know, astride like a titan. And you know, it was just like, I'm sorry that your self-worth is so low, but this is not my problem.
That's a very nice sports car you have that you're picking your 5-year-old up in.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm like, I'm sorry. But sort of finding allies, and then also finding moms who were cool. The ones who wanted to, who were open to being like, yes, it is somewhat weird, but yeah, we can make this work. I mean, I found that sort of being friendly, outgoing, bringing snacks, hosting birthday parties, being the one being like, who said like, hey, let's have, like, I'm happy to have the kids over. And when the children were younger, there was always that weird sort of transition of like, am I going to leave my child at home essentially a man by himself? And eventually you sort of reach a point of trust with people and it would happen.
Yeah.
But it wasn't, it took time.
It's not, I know. It's not an overnight thing. You have to kind of become known in your community as, you know, the man.
As the dad.
Yeah.
Yes.
The dad. I mean,
yes. And yeah. So I was there for parent teacher night. I was there for the, you know, holiday fair. I was there for, oh, you want to have lunch at school with your kid. You know, those are the things where you meet the other parents and they say like, okay, you were here. You were showing up. You were doing the work. So I feel somewhat comfortable talking to you.
I also have that when it comes to like doctors and schools, I have this kind of running conversation when, you know, a new doctor will call my wife and then she'll forward the message on and they'll say, well, I called your wife. And I said, you can do that. But it's like, it's a black hole. Like my wife, like she runs her own business. Like just call me. He's like, so you want me to call you? Should I call your wife too? It's like, if you'd like to, but it'd probably be more effective if you just called me.
Because it'll make you feel better. Sure.
I'm a dad. Like this is child is mine too. You know, this is not like a crazy thing here.
Yes. Yeah, I was just gonna say, like, yes, I have a personal relationship with our child's pediatrician, our child's dentist. You know, I'm the one who's going like, oh, with our child's eyeglass doctor. You know, I'm the one going like, okay, it's 1 year. We got to go set up our annual eye exams. Here we go.
You started talking. You've been at the Baltimore Sun, and it's been mostly during the pandemic, right? Since you've been at the Sun.
I started in 2018. So,
half
and half.
So, but I'd love to talk to you about how it's changed, like what it was like, you know, 2018, 2019, when you're going into the Baltimore Sun, you know, one of the great newspapers in America, when you're going in there versus and being the lead dad and your wife having her own career, and how it's changed, you know, now when you're, you know, predominantly working, you know, from your home office.
I mean, it has changed and it also hasn't changed, if that makes sense. You know, I remember vividly being in the office, and it was maybe, you know, it's maybe 4:30, 5 o'clock. I'm trying to get out and to go pick up my child. Already I'm running late, and some news breaks on my beat that I needed to deal with. And I had to sort of stop and deal with the news. So I was even later to pick up my child. And sort of that ride home, like on the way to pick her up, and then once she was in the car, sort of that sense of like, I have disappointed my child, I have failed my child, really sort of stuck with me. And when the pandemic came along, it really sort of freed me from that. And now when I talk to my superiors, I say like, listen, we are letting some people come back into the office. And I go like, I'm good. I will come in for meetings. You know, we want to do a team building exercise. I will take my reporters out for lunch. But on a day-to-day basis, you know where to find me. I'm at home.
Yep.
And so that change has been sort of the biggest one to me. The one thing that I miss the most about the newsroom, being physically in the newsroom, is the neural network. It was sort of like the ability to overhear conversations that are not meant for you. They're not secret, but just sort of hearing what other people are working on and sort of going like, hey, that sparks an idea in me, or, oh, we're working on something similar. Maybe we should collaborate, or, oh, that's a terrible idea. Please don't do that. We tried to do that story. Yeah, no, seriously, don't do that one. That part, I think, is like anyone who works in a newsroom is hard to replicate.
Yeah. I miss the energy, you know, and, you know, not with the New York Times anymore, but having not been there since February 2020, the energy is amazing on the positive side. And then on the sort of self-interested side, I do miss the expense account money.
Yes.
You can't discount those.
Yeah. Actually, the thing I miss, one of the other things I miss about the newsroom is we used to have, I mean, it's still there, but there was a space where people would bring snacks from their travels. So if you went somewhere internationally, you might bring back, I once brought back chicken flavored potato chips, just because I was like, who would flavor their potato chips like chicken? Surprisingly, not so bad. But you know, people would leave like treats and donuts and just unusual, interesting food items. And it was a good place to sort of gather and, you know, just sort of talk.
Oh yeah. And then all the books that come in and they're all on there. Yes. Like, oh, I wanted that book. There it is. I'll take it.
Oh, look at that.
Look at that.
Yeah. Or, ooh, I wasn't going to read that one. Still not going to read it.
Exactly. You know, one of your roles is the DE&I editor, mm-hmm. diversity, equity, and inclusion editor. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I talk about at the Company of Dads is that if, you know, my goal is to one, make being a lead dad normal, but also really to set up a network where we can help people fulfill their potential. How can we expect to have senior female executives or senior female, you know, working moms rise up in an organization if we don't have an acknowledgement that, you know, they and their spouses need some sort of help with parenting, and that it's okay if the man has the more flexible schedule, it's okay if he is the one in support, because otherwise, you know, you look at this and like, how else are you going to be a senior female executive? I guess you make a lot of money, could hire people, but most of them, you have to have that flexibility. But we don't acknowledge that, and then we also don't. I think companies are slow to acknowledge that. 2019 is not coming back. Like how we work now is fundamentally different. And if we really, you know, you're an expert in this, you know that there's tons of lip service at companies.
Oh, I hear so much lip service. Nonsense. It's embarrassing.
Right. And so how do we look at, you know, parenting and shifting parenting roles as one way to help women fulfill their potential?
You know, I think that as the pandemic has shown, and not only at The Sun, but other companies I hear about, there really is an embrace of the work from home, which I think sort of allows a lot of people to succeed who might not succeed previously because of parental responsibilities. I know that like at The Sun, like I've had candid conversations with management where they've said, you know, we think we've actually lost out to people because pre-pandemic, we weren't flexible about sort of working from home. But now that we've seen that, listen, we won a Pulitzer while working virtually, so we can do it. So there's been a real sort of shift. And I think it's going to take more companies being able to sort of be flexible, maybe thinking about 4-day work weeks or sort of non-traditional schedules. I mean, those are the sorts of things that I think people need.
Plus, I have to think, and again, I want your opinion on this, that the best companies are already sort of getting in front of this and saying, if we don't, you know, adapt to the world of work today, if we don't adapt to the fact that, you know, work and home and family are never going to be separate again, they're inextricably intertwined post-pandemic. If we don't get ahead of it, we're going to lose our top performing employees. Because, you know, a company never loses its worst performing employees.
No.
Nobody wants them. They have no place to go.
We're just stuck with them.
When you look at, you know, some of the companies you've covered or some of the stories you've edited, when you think of the most progressive companies addressing the end of this or the scrambling of this, you know, work-life balance, what are they doing? The proactive ones?
Well, I mean, I think in addition to sort of offering flexible schedules and sort of work from home, I think there's a real effort to diversify the workforce. And I think that sort of that plays into it by bringing in, let me put it this way. I like to tell people that I can only be responsible for the people that I help get hired. And when I see people get hired and I go like, wow, I would have preferred there was more diversity in that. I can't do anything about that. But what I can personally control is sort of helping to shape that pipeline of people who sort of show up and get their resumes read and maybe get that interview. And I think sort of diversifying our workforce even more than it currently is sort of shows that companies can be flexible and sort of acknowledge the reality that we're living in today.
Mm-hmm. What do you think it would take to make it more normal for men to have this lead dad role, take on the more flexible work schedule and allow their wives to do what they're going to do work-wise?
I think it's going to take more of people like you. I mean, sort of people who are, you know, normalizing it. When you and I were doing it, it wasn't because we thought it was cool or interesting. It was just something we did. And the world was sometimes hostile to it, but it was like, that didn't give us an excuse to fail. It was just sort of like, okay, the world's kind of hostile. That's fine. You just got to sort of push forward. I mean, I think that's like, there's a stigma to being a lead dad. And that's unfortunate.
Yeah, I say this like, you know, 10 years ago, as this is just starting for me, my oldest daughter will be 13 this summer. I don't know if I would have been, you know, I hate to admit this. I think of myself as a pretty secure person. I don't know if I would have been, you know, secure enough to just come out and say, this is what I am. It was always like, well, yeah, you know, I'm a New York Times columnist.
And
I'm also sitting here at the ballet recital. So, yes. But, you know, and I remember when you and I reconnected a couple of years ago when you were living in the same area where I live. And it was kind of like you're talking about in the beginning, you know, the New York City moms. I'm like, that's one of my FT buddies. Like, here we are from back in the day, from 2000, yes. You know, back in the day. And we connected first on that work level. And then as our wives got to know each other, as we did a few things together, like, okay, wait, he's, you know, we're together. We're in the same, you know, lead dad tribe.
Yes. Well, I mean, I guess it's sort of a question to you is that like, what kind of people reach out to you now that this is sort of up and going? Are you hearing from more dads who are like, how can I sort of adopt this attitude?
Yeah. I mean, that's why it's been working well with sort of the online community and these podcasts have been great for community building because it's not like there's a whole pocket. Like you go to any town, any suburban town in America, and there's a working mom group, there's a stay-at-home mom group, there's, you know, the guys who go to work normally and are less involved with their parents. And obviously that fourth group exists, that group of lead dads, but it's sort of under the radar and quiet. And so having that online, you know, community has been really vital because people are comfortable saying, hey, this is what I do. I want to reach out. I want to be part of this. And you got any tips or what have you learned or how has it worked for you? And my goal is like, you know, to build the momentum so that it becomes, you know, more normal for people within their community, you know, even if it's, you know, only 10% of the dad, whatever it is, to have them come out. But I've had some weird times come out where, you know, I had this guy I've had a lot of weird times since October when I announced that this is starting. And I had this guy that I've known for 6-7 years. Our kids are in school, have been in and out of school together, you know, sports, see him around. He lives next town over, see him around everywhere. And he comes up to me and he says, you know, I want to be part of what you're doing here, but can you just off the record keep my name? And I was like, what are you talking? Are you talking about the company of dad? He's like, yeah.
Are you sure he wasn't trying to buy drugs from me?
No, this is what I think. And so, and I know, and his wife is an attorney. He works in real estate. He has a good job. He's got two daughters, and it was like this not being comfortable enough to sort of say that he is the lead dad. And so I looked at him and said, hey man, you know, you're welcome here. And you know, however you want to interact is fine by me, but you know, just, you know, this is about a community for men who are lead dads. We're not like taking puppies and putting them in a bag with rocks and like throwing them in the river. This isn't like Cruella de Vil in hiding. And he kind of looked at me like, what are you talking about, man? I was like, anyway, you're welcome, buddy. You're welcome. Just come on in. You know, just, you know, make up your own name, whatever. But it's that type of stuff that you and I don't have it, but I want to make it more normal, more comfortable. And, you know, something that, you know, couples talk about. Because, you know, you and I have been, you know, with our wives for a long time. Like, if you don't have these conversations, like, problems don't age well, you know? And not dealing with the problem doesn't make the problem go away.
Yes, I have to say, like, you know, when you asked me to be on this podcast, you know, I was talking to my wife and daughter about it, and I found myself thinking, like, is this going to sound weird saying that I'm going to be on a podcast about lead dads? And then I was like, well, no, because it's true. And they were obviously perfectly fine with it, but it did sort of cross my mind. I was like, wait, is this going to make anyone uncomfortable by saying that? But, you know, it is what it is.
It is what it is. This has been awesome. Thank you for being on the Company of Dads podcast with me today. I always give my guest the last word. So any parting thoughts?
Yes. Go to BaltimoreSun.com, subscribe. I and my team and the paper as a whole do amazing work. We recently actually just put out a piece looking at how some Black-owned restaurants in Baltimore are facing over-enforcement by their neighbors via 311 calls and complaints to the liquor board. And it's a real in-depth piece. You know, we talked to sort of leaders and people that's actually happened to. And let's just put it this way. It does feature a bag of poop on someone's steps. So,
wow. Okay, BaltimoreSun.com. All right, go to it.
Thank you very much, Paul.
All right, thank you.